Yes, we have theater opening this week. It's opening at Stage Left, a play called Arcadia. Let's get a taste of it right now.
How dare you!
I cannot be called to account for what was written in private and read without regard to propriety.
Addressed to me?
Left in my room in the event of my death.
What earthly use is a love letter from beyond the grave?
As much, surely, as from this side of it. The second letter, however, was not addressed to your ladyship.
I have a mother's right to open a letter addressed by you to my daughter, whether in the event of your life, your death, or your imbecility. What do you mean by writing to her of rice pudding when she has just suffered the shock of violent death in our midst?
Whose death?
Yours, you wretch.
Oh, yes, I see.
I do not know which is the madder of your ravings. One envelope full of rice pudding, the other of the most insolent familiarities regarding several parts of my body, but have no doubt which is the more intolerable to me.
Which?
Oh, aren't we saucy when our bags are packed?
A little bit of Arcadia done for us by LaDonna Vojtovich and Chris Jensen from the upcoming opening this Friday at Stage Left of Arcadia. And we'll get back to the actors soon enough, but let's check in with the directors and find out about this play. With us today are Jamie Flannery and Kathleen Jeffs. Kathleen, I understand that you're the one that pushes for Tom Stoppard plays, are you?
Every chance I get.
Okay, well, tell me why.
Well, if you talk to a lot of different people who love theater, Arcadia comes up as a favorite time and time again. It appeals to so many different kinds of audience members and just people. So I think it's one that people love because it's such an intelligent play. It covers everything from the second law of thermodynamics to the love between Lady Croom and Septimus Hodge, her aristocratic daughter's tutor. So I think it's just one that I love and that Tom Stoppard appeals to so many different kinds of people.
And then you like to have a partner in crime, so you rope Jamie Flannery into helping?
Absolutely. And couldn't do it without him.
And explain that.
Well, Jamie and I worked together on another Tom Stoppard play, Hapgood, over at Spokane Civic Theater last year, about this time last year. And that was a fantastic opportunity to get to know Jamie and the team and Dave Rideout and Tim Linton, who are also members of the Hapgood cast and now rejoining us for Arcadia. And I dramaturged that show for Jamie. Jamie co-directed that with Keith Dixon over there. And we got to know each other, and that was the start of it. I said, well, do you know his other play, Arcadia? And Jamie did not, which is a theater crime. So he had to find out about it, and here we are.
Before we can bring in Jamie and find out a little bit about Arcadia, what exactly does a dramaturg do?
A dramaturg is responsible for kind of tying all of the ends together. A lot of research into the play. This particular play takes place in two different time periods. So looking at 1809 and looking at the contemporary world and the science mentioned in the play, for example, a dramaturg would tease all that out and say, well, what did things look like in 1809, and what do we think of those concepts now? And then kind of elucidate that with the cast and crew and make sure everybody's on the same page so that when the actors say the words, they really understand where they're coming from and what their characters are speaking about, and then they can do the acting.
Okay, so Jamie, good morning.
Good morning, Vern.
Go ahead and bring the microphone up to you a little bit more.
Got it.
Okay. And so talk about jumping into Tom Stoppard plays. Have you come to love them?
I've come to love them for the challenge, certainly. While I love Neil Simon, the inherent challenges of Tom Stoppard and it's like many different dimensions colliding in the same place and trying to make sense of them, and making sense of them not only for the actors, but then bringing that to the stage and making it sense so that the audience can actually start to sort through. It's so interesting, literally every night that we have rehearsals at this point and full performances, I learn something new about the story, and it's things become revealed constantly. So it's that sense of just sifting through and then finding the humor and understanding what the heck they're talking about.
Well, and you talked about elements, and so what about this element of 1809 versus the present from either of you? How does this work in this play, of a play happening in two time periods?
Well, there are seven different scenes in the two acts, and it takes place in the same room on the Coverley estate. And so there are the relations, certainly, that this family has lived there this entire time, and there's a sense of story that something has happened, and these writers come together. They start to investigate. They're there in the modern time investigating, okay, what happened to this? Where did this person, who was this person? How did these things happen? And so we're able to go back and forth between the times and start to piece together the mystery.
And what's fun about that is it's set around one common table. So you've got this beautiful English country home in Derbyshire in 1809, and then you see that same table in that same house, in that same room, in the contemporary moment, in our time now. So around that same set, you get these two different casts coming around, one from one time period and one from another. And as you mentioned, these writers, these researchers, we've got Tammy Rochford playing Hannah and Dave Rideout playing Bernard, and they've come to the Croom estate to find out more. She's researching the garden, and he's researching Lord Byron, who he believes has visited the Croom estate. Mm-hmm. And so together they're piecing this out, and then we go back in time to show us what was really happening and how right or how wrong those two researchers are in their findings.
So is that the basic tension of the play? I mean, every play needs to be built around tension. So is this tension of what is real or not? Or
absolutely.
What is our perception or not?
Absolutely.
Talk a little more about that.
And what can be researched? What can be found out? And what can you know about the past for sure? Can you know that Lord Byron was here? Well, sure. He's got a record in the game book. He shot a hare. And somebody wrote that down. But there are other things that you can't know. Things that happen between the characters. Things that no one will ever know. So it's about what can be written down and what's lost forever, what's lost to time. Lost but ineradicable, he says.
And literally how sex can muck up the algorithm.
Okay. Of course. Now we're starting to get something going in this play. And does the fact of sex happen both in 1809 and in the present?
Absolutely. Yeah. There is sexual tension throughout, and we look for every opportunity to tie the sense of sex and how it exists and how it's unpredictable in the two different times. And it's interesting how we find. People are pretty promiscuous in both time periods, mm-hmm. it seems.
They call it the attraction that Newton left out because it's all about, you know, entropy and forces and repelling and attracting. And then they kind of use that, Stoppard uses that as a theme in the play to show you people being repelled and attracted to each other.
Wow. And the two characters that we've already met, Lady Croom and Septimus Hodge, who are they? I assume they're from the 1809 story.
So I'll start with Lady Croom. So she is the lady of the manor. She is Lady Croom of the Croom estate, the Coverley family. And she has employed Septimus Hodge to tutor her daughter Thomasina in Latin and geometry and geography and all the subjects that Thomasina needs to know about. And she's 13 when the play starts as Thomasina. And she's played by Brooklyn Robinson, our wonderful actress. And so Lady Croom kind of walks around, very, very large person, you know, very, very big personality, and kind of storms about and commands her tutor Septimus to educate her daughter. But then their relationship evolves over time into something else.
Well, let's go back to them and hear another scene from this play. LaDonna Vojtovich as Lady Croom and Chris Jensen as Septimus Hodge.
Your friend has gone before you, and I have dispatched the harlot Chaita and her husband, and also my brother for bringing them here. Such is the sentence, you see, for choosing unwisely in your acquaintance. Banishment. Lord Byron is a rake and a hypocrite, and the sooner he sails for the Levant, the sooner he will find society congenial to his character.
It has been a night of reckoning.
Indeed. I wish it had passed uneventfully with you and Mr. Chaita shooting each other with the decorum due a civilized house. You have no secrets left, Mr. Hodge. They spilled out between shrieks and oaths and tears. It is fortunate that a lifetime's devotion to the sporting gun has halved my husband's hearing to the ear he sleeps on.
I'm afraid I have no knowledge of what has occurred.
Your trollop was discovered in Lord Byron's room.
Ah. Discovered by Mr. Chaita.
Who else?
I am very sorry, madam, for having used your kindness to bring my unworthy friend to your notice. He will have to give an account of himself to me. You may be sure.
Okay, stay there, because I want to find out how you people feel about your characters. And so, LaDonna, how do you feel about being this Lady Croom? Is that kind of really fun to do?
Oh, I absolutely love this character. She's larger than life. She's everything that I'm really not, and so that makes it absolutely fun to play with.
So every time in your life when you wanted to really tell the truth to somebody and yell at somebody, you get to let it all out.
Exactly, and boss everybody around, and it's wonderful.
And I assume that with Tom Stoppard, there's probably other levels to it. What is she beyond being this larger-than-life bossy character?
She's actually a very intelligent woman. I think being in that time period, her station in life, she did have to marry when she was 17 and lead a domestic life when she actually could have, I think, become a scientist, you know, mm-hmm. if she were living in a different era.
And then Theo Christensen and Septimus Hodge, are you kind of a devious underling, or what? How would you describe yourself?
Septimus is a little complex because he is, speaking of, you know, sex being the attraction that Newton left out, he seems to be up in everyone's skirts in the play, everyone who's running around that house. At the same time, he's extremely intellectual, and he has a real kind of kindness and sweetness to him at the same time. But he's very good with a comeback, and he has absolutely no tolerance for, there's a poet in the house named Ezra Chater, who Septimus thinks is just a complete joke, and is a complete joke. Septimus is, I think, right about everything. He just doesn't always, he's not always politic about everything. And part of what the play traces over the years, it starts in 1809 and goes, I think, to 1813, something like that. And it traces the development of Septimus's relationship with Thomasina, Lady Thomasina, who he's been tutoring, as she gets a little bit older. And he is just, he watches her development sort of wondrously because she's a total prodigy. And it gets to the point where she's more brilliant than he is. And he's quite a brilliant character, quite a brilliant person.
Well, since you described that brilliance and that ability and that way to criticize others, are you a bit typecast with your background as a journalist and as a theater critic?
I was a theater critic for 10 years, and I did develop during that time. I think maybe develop is not even right. I did parlay my sort of critical sensibility. There was a time earlier, like 15 years ago, where I was, I think, a harsher person. You know, I would say things. I would be much more critical of people than I am now. I think I've softened a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a real connection to that, for sure. And I first read this play when I was a freshman in college, just after it had come out on Broadway. A friend of mine who was a few years ahead of me at college told me, you have to read this new Tom Stoppard play, Arcadia. And it has been, ever since, my favorite play. Mm-hmm. So the fact that I remember thinking to myself, I would just like to see this at some point. And I couldn't even hope that I'd be able to be in it. So this is just a real thrill.
And you earlier were telling me some amazing hyperbole line about this play from a critic.
Right. So Brad Lighthouser in The New Yorker wrote a few years ago on the play's 20th anniversary that it is the best play written in English in his lifetime.
Yeah. So back to you, Kathleen Jeffs. Is this a good part of, is it just the sheer brilliance of Tom Stoppard? Talk a little bit more about him.
It is, absolutely. It's the way he's able to weave the humanity through the attractions and the forces of science. I think that's what drew people to Hapgood as well. It's the way he's able to take a location, in this case, a beautiful country house, and put humans in it, and then make the backdrop a landscape gardening. One thing we haven't talked much about yet is this amazing pastoral landscape that the play is set in. So you look out the back window of the home onto this rolling green. And so as you're sitting there as a theater goer, come to see this play, you have this expansive sense that you're in a very large, very, very deep, very green, verdant place. And that's just fun for a few hours, right? And so when you start there and then you kind of get entangled in the intricacies of Stoppardian language, that's when you start to really have fun and tease out what's going on in people's minds and what's going on in Thomasina's lesson book. Because as Chris said, she's a bit of a genius, a bit of a prodigy, and she's working out things far ahead of her time. So the audience gets to do that along with her and really see what it is that she's working out. And this play is very special to me because I've directed it before. I looked at this play in 2003 in Oxford. So in the middle of a famous university in a college garden, we put this thing on outside using God's illumination and God's weather, and we put it on around a table in a beautiful garden. And I think that you're going to get a sense of that history and that Stoppardian expansiveness and that kind of just the ability to roam free in your imagination as you watch this play.
And it is the wonderful magic of theater that the expansiveness will be in the 60-seat stage left theater, which is on 3rd Avenue, 108 West 3rd Avenue, about a block and a half west of Division right there. And it is, it opens this Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then for two more weekends. So April 21st through May 7th is Arcadia at Stage Left Theater. And so we have one more scene. What else have we not said about this play to intrigue people to come to it before we get in? Or either that, or let's kind of introduce this final scene, which with the issue of skirts, I think, it's going to be kind of obvious.
I think one of the great challenges, and I think what will be really enjoyable for the audience, is that as the two time periods cross, things that are brought in that are left on the table are from both time periods, to include a tortoise that isn't the same tortoise, but is on the table. And so documents or portfolios or books that have shown up new in 1809 now exist next to the same document in an old and antiquated version. And things on the table begin to pile up. It's like sorting through and sifting through where is my prop and where are the things. So it's fun to watch this pile of stuff that the actors having to manipulate themselves around. I think that's going to be enjoyable for the audience.
Because that's literally what you see, is that science and the romanticism. This is Lord Byron's stomping ground. So if you imagine Lord Byron stomping around with these people working out the new science of the Enlightenment, then here we are.
Wow. Well, let's bring back our actors to put a little coda on this with one more scene from Arcadia by Tom Stoppard.
My lady, I was alone with my thoughts in the gazebo when Mrs. Chater ran me to ground, and I, being in such a passion and an agony of unrelieved desire, I thought, in my madness, that the Chater, with her skirts over her head, would give me the momentary illusion of the happiness to which I dared not put a face.
I do not know when I have received a more unusual compliment, Mr. Hodge. I hope I am more than a match for Mrs. Chater with her head in a bucket. Does she wear drawers?
She does.
Yes, I have heard that drawers are being worn now. It is unnatural for women to be got up like jockeys. I cannot approve. I know nothing of Pericles or the Athenian philosophers. I can spare them an hour in my sitting room when I have bathed. 7 o'clock, bring a book.
A scene from Arcadia by Tom Stoppard. From that scene, it sounds like it might give the event at Get Lit, called Erotic Fan Fiction, a run for its money. And so thank you all for coming in. What a treat to hear about this play opening. Once again, it's opening this Friday, Saturday at 7:30, the standard playtimes around here, Sunday at 2 for three full weekends.